Okay, everyone, we are live. And Erica, we do have a quorum, correct?
That is correct, Chair.
Okay, great.
We will do roll call.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order and we'll do roll call.
Great. Good morning, committee members. Agua Caliente, Banda Cahuilla Indians, City of Blythe, City of Cathedral City.
Here.
City of Coachella.
Here.
Desert Healthcare District. Director Rogers is here for the audio record. City of Desert Hot Springs?
Here.
City of Indian Wells?
Present.
City of Indio? City of La Quinta?
Here.
City of Palm Desert? City of Palm Springs? City of Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County?
Here.
Torres Martinez, Desert Cahuilla Indians, and Agua Caliente, Banda Cahuilla Indians.
Here.
Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, great. First of all, Happy New Year to everyone. We did meet last month, and we're glad to have a few new members to the committee as well, too. So I want to welcome Denise Delgado from the City of Coachella. Welcome, Denise. And Mayor Donna Griffin from Indian Wells. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you.
And I know that we're waiting for Palm Desert, and she's not here yet, Karina. And also Lynn from City of Rancho Mirage. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with that, we will go on to public comment. Erica, any public comment that we have received or any hands raised?
Chair, we've received no written comments, and I don't see any hands raised at this time. But for the audio record, I would note that the Vice Chair of Torres Martinez, Mr. Miralles, is now joining us, and so is Councilmember Holstage from the City of Palm Springs.
Okay, great. Okay, if not, then we'll move on to Chair and Committee items and announcements. I don't have anything, Erica. Does the committee members... anybody have anything to share? Hearing none, we'll go back to you, Erica. Any staff announcements?
I do see Councilmember Holstage as her hand raised.
Oh, okay. Christy, welcome. Good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the members of the committee. I just wanted to note that the City of Palm Springs allocated an additional $3 million for our navigation center, getting us up to over $28 million leverage for this regional program. So I was going to raise that with the committee, and then CFCVAG staff recommends that we do at least just a staff report update in the next meeting. So the whole committee can be aware of all the funding streams. Thank you to Riverside County and Greg Rodriguez for finding $5 million additional for this program from IEHP and Molina. We're really reaching huge success for this program and project and moving it forward, and would love to share that with this committee. I think we already have a city staff report that could be easily included in the next packet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for that, and we look forward to that, and thank you and to your council for that as well, too. So we look forward to it. And I want to welcome Joseph as well, too. Welcome. We're glad to have you aboard as well, too. Okay, we'll move on to the consent calendar. If you've had an opportunity to review the consent calendar, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. Erica, we don't have to do roll call. We can raise our hands, correct?
That is correct, Chair.
So raise your hand if you're in favor or say
aye. I have to abstain.
Okay. We have one abstention.
And that was from the City of Cathedral City?
Yes. Okay. We'll move on to our discussion and action items. Item 6A is a partnership with the Inland County Legal Services. And Marcia, I think you have a slide presentation that you're going to share with us. And this slide presentation will also be available to us if you wish. Just contact Erica and she can send it out to you. So in the interest of time, Don't worry about taking notes. You'll get the slide presentation. Marcia, you're on.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Marcia Johnson. I am an attorney and a practice group director for the public benefits and education team at Inland Counties Legal Services. I know you have a very busy agenda, so I won't take too much of your time. I just want to discuss the partnership that we have with CDAG and the impact that we're making to assist individuals with who are experiencing homelessness. Okay. So with CDAG, we created what we call the Public Benefits Homeless Advocacy Clinic. And through that, I'll go through it a little bit more, but we work together to provide public benefits, income, and vital documents to individuals who are experiencing homelessness. Just a little bit of overview about Inland County's legal services in general. We have 8 different practice groups. Health, our public benefits and education is combined. We have a consumer team, which also includes tax and bankruptcy. We have a housing practice group, which is our biggest and definitely most in demand. We also do family law and domestic violence. We have an immigration practice group, an elder law team, and then a systemic impact litigation team as well. General information about eligibility. So we are legal aid. We don't charge our clients anything, any fees whatsoever. We are here to help individuals who are either low income or we have special funding for seniors who are 60 plus, which allows us to assist them even if they have high income or high assets. We always recommend to people if they're not sure whether they will qualify to just give us a call. We'll do a screening. We'll let them know if we're able to assist them. So as far as the clinic, we provide a number of services in a few different areas within public benefits. So we focus on SSI or Supplemental Security Income, CAPI, which is the Cash Aid Program for Immigrants. It's essentially the equivalent of SSI, but it's California based. So if an individual would not qualify for the federal SSI due to citizenship status, they could qualify for CAPI. So we look out for that in case that's a barrier. And it works essentially the same as SSI, same benefit amount, same disability standard, et cetera. We also assist with Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, CalWORKs, and CalFresh primarily. Some of the other benefits we help with are general relief and general assistance. It just depends on what county you're in as far as how they title it. We can help with VA benefits, specifically the disability benefits and getting monetary compensation when that's appropriate. And then another huge area, I think this is where we've done the most work, is vital documents. So assisting individuals with obtaining birth certificates, social security cards, ID cards, all of those things that they need to be able to access housing and public benefits. And if I'm talking too fast, just tell me. So the way the clinic is designed, with CDAG, we have a virtual aspect. We do some in-person, but it's mostly virtual. So our first appointments, we have advocates on our end. They meet through a Teams link. On CDAG's end, they help us to actually locate clients and to bring them in so that we're able to access them. And we have our meetings that way. And it works well. We've been doing it now for, I think we're going on 2 years or so. I can't even remember exactly when we started it, kind of did a pilot. And we're able to interview them. We go through the intake process to make sure they're eligible for services. If it's something that's a little bit more straightforward, like a CalFresh or CalWORKs application, or even vital docs, we will start the process immediately so that we can get all of those things turned around as quickly as possible for clients. We will also interview them to address more in-depth legal issues, like if they have an SSI case, they want to apply, if they think that they may qualify, or perhaps they have an overpayment or cessation. Anything related to denial, cessations, overpayments, and overissuance, we assist with that process. It's a little bit lengthier. Then we do what we call our follow-up appointments. That allows us to meet with them again in 2 weeks, typically, and we will either provide them counsel and advice if it's something where we can't provide a higher level of service like direct representation. We will also turn over their documents if we get them their birth certificates, social security cards, et cetera, so we can ensure that they have those items before we close their case out in the clinic. We also give them status updates. et cetera, through our follow-up process, which again, CDAG helps us to connect with those clients by physically locating them and bringing them in for their appointments. So with this clinic, we have a specific grant. And with that grant, we have a goal of serving 450 total clients. It's a 3-year grant. So by the end of 2024, that's our goal. Our outcome for those 450 all fall under the same umbrella of obtaining or preserving access to housing, because that's ultimately the goal through all the various means that through the clinic. Our hope is to help 200 clients obtain, increase, preserve disability or age-related benefits. So again, that's like SSI, SSDI, could be retirement if it applies. 60 clients, at least, we want to help them obtain, preserve, or increase benefits to relieve hunger. So that's our CalFresh cases. And at least 40 clients, our goal is to obtain, preserve, or increase benefits to help people maintain economic self-sufficiency. That's a little bit more like a catch-all. So our GR, GA cases, VA benefits, things like that could possibly fall under that category. And so far, with our progress, we have served 137 of the 450 clients that you hope to. 9 of those 200 we've been able to help with disability or age-related benefits. 5 of the 60 clients that we want to help with hunger benefits so far. And of the 40 clients that we want to help with that kind of catch-all to maintain economic self-sufficiency, we've been able to assist 21 so far. So we're making our way. We have to diversify our cases a bit, but we are definitely making progress. And CDAG's role in the clinic, they help to refer people to us first. They will work with them to complete an online application with the client prior to the clinic, which is very helpful because it allows us to move things along faster in that limited window of time we have once we actually are meeting with the client. We work together to schedule and compile a list of applicants. We give them a list and say, these are the people that we're going to see at the next clinic. We meet every other Wednesday. And then on our end, we have paralegal advocates. So we do work with a lot of non-attorney advocates as well as attorneys who will complete the screening process, the intake, and then begin legal services. And then my role really is to just oversee the clinic, provide support to my team, approve case strategy and things like that. And this is what our successful collaboration looks like. So conducting initial intake and application for ICLS services, the outreach component, which I cannot say enough about. Without it, we absolutely would not be able to reach this population the way that we have so far. So a lot of outreach and assistance with contacting hard to reach clients. We haven't quite gotten into the medical appointments part so far, but we're hoping we may be able to implement that as well. But for clients who are pursuing disability benefits and need to build a medical history, potentially being able to help with setting up medical appointments or transporting if that's possible. We also assist with document retrieval for SSI, SSDI, GRGA cases, along with CDAG's assistance in that area. And then another huge benefit is that they help to provide access to technology and private meeting spaces, all of the things that we need to be able to run the clinic efficiently and meet with clients. We owe that to CDAG, so we're very thankful for that partnership. And then this is just ICLS's contact information. We have a toll-free hotline. We also have a senior line. So again, that's for individuals 60 and over. We do have 4 branch offices right now. We did have an office in India. We're looking to find new space. We closed that office during COVID, but our hope is to reopen an office in that area. But we are based out of Ontario, San Bernardino, Victorville, and Riverside. And then our website as well is inlandlegal.org. Applications can be submitted there. You can learn a lot more about ICLS and what services we provide to the community on the website as well. And since COVID, we are working a hybrid schedule, but we have yet to close our doors. We were open every single day through the pandemic. So however we need to get to people to assist them, we will. And the last slide is just my contact information, my direct line here at ICLS, as well as my email address, my name, and my title. And that's all I have for you guys. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you, Marcia. Any questions for Marcia?
Chair, if I might, before we get into questions. Thank you, Marcia, for joining us. And some of you, the committee members, might be wondering why we brought this one to you today. You're going to hear in the next couple of items where we have seen some challenges in our program over the last year and certainly see some opportunities. One of the biggest successes we've had in helping streamline case management in a short period of time is by establishing partners. This was a direction you all provided some time ago. You encouraged our executive director to find partnerships, find ways to leverage other resources, and ICLS has been one of them. At one point, all of our clients that we were case managing were in some part working with ICLS on something, some of their program. The resources that ICLS brings is less time that our case managers and our workers are spending chasing down vital documents, navigating some of the legal processes to get them ready for housing. So we wanted to just kind of provide you this insight for our legal clinics because they have been so important to the success we've seen.
Thank you. Ernesto, question.
Yes. Marcia, thank you for the great, wonderful presentation there and everything that you guys do there. Now, from all the individuals that have reached out to you and that you so far you have been able to assist with benefits and everything, now, how many individuals have not followed through with the benefits that are being offered?
That's a good question. We have had some clients who we may either start the process with and then we're not able to locate again to follow up and complete it. At the very least, we will still follow up with providing counsel and advice and say, hey, this is what you came to us for. This is what we advise you to do next. And you're always welcome to get re-referred back into the program. I don't have the exact number. I could get that data and always provide it to Erica so that information will be provided to you. But I don't have it off the top of my head as to how many have fallen out of the program once we already started services. But I will say, sorry, go ahead.
Is it a small percentage or a large percentage?
What I would say, actually, I think with CVAG, because we have another partner that we work with similarly, with CVAG, we have had pretty good results. We've even been able to assist some clients on the long term. So for a few months, at least, where we've had to stay in contact to be able to finish up their case. So we've done pretty well, I would say, especially with this particular population. But if you'd like, you know, exact data, I can definitely get that to you after this meeting.
Okay. And my other question is, out of the four goals that you are being offered to individuals, which one do you think will be the easiest to achieve? And which one do you think it will be the toughest to achieve?
Oh, that's a really good question. I would say the disability age-based benefits is probably the toughest just because how long the process takes. So a Social Security case statistically is usually not won until you go to the hearing level. So that would be the second level of appeal. So that means we've applied, we've waited, we've gotten denied, we've appealed, we've waited, we've gotten denied. Then we have to apply for a hearing and wait for that process. And that can sometimes take 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's probably the toughest area purely because of how the system is built. And it's not an easy process to get people benefits, even when it's clear that they should be eligible. Just because of the length of time that's involved. I would say the easiest is usually assisting them with vital docs, and we categorize those types of cases and those outcomes under that 450 umbrella. I'm thinking it, for us, is HO3, that's what that outcome is called, but that's the outcome regarding preserving or accessing housing. That one I think is the easiest thus far because vital docs is a very common need for the population. We even have some clients who we help get a vital doc and then they lose it or it's stolen or something like that. So they have to come back a second time within a short period of time.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, Carol, we'll move on to you.
Thank you. Thank you for that presentation, Martha. That was really great work that you're doing. My question is that the homeless that I've encountered are transient, they don't have cell phones, access to computers. How do you address that problem?
We are trying to always think outside of the box and get as creative as possible. So with our partnership with CVAG, you know, we are targeting this particular population, but I will say ICLS as a whole, really, we do various types of programs and provide assistance to the same population as well. So just some of the things that we try to do is, we really do have to rely a lot of times on service coordinators, caseworkers, and things like that to help keep us linked to the clients. They tend to have a closer relationship. They tend to know that even if their cell phone is deactivated or they kind of fall off for a little bit, they need to come back and get back in touch with their caseworkers and social workers. So we've really made it a point to build relationships with various organizations that are providing case management so that we can use them as a link to be able to stay connected to clients. We do also, through some of our other grants, we do a heavy amount of outreach. So we have our the HDAP grant for San Bernardino County. On a weekly basis, we are physically going out into the field to locate clients, find clients, whether they have an address or whether we just know cross streets where they may be staying. We will physically go out to them to try to keep contact regularly. And just building a rapport, I think, usually helps because they know that eventually when they need to resurface, they need to reach out to us again. You're welcome.
Donna, I think you had a question, or was it answered? You're on mute.
Yep. Yeah, it was answered. Director Rogers asked the question that I had, but I did want to add, after 35 years of working in the legal field in the Coachella Valley, I know that we have always really cherished the work that Inland County Legal Services has done. So I hope that the Indio office gets up and running at some time soon. And there's a lot of retired legal people that are probably looking to volunteer. So I'll send them your way.
Thank you. Yeah, we have it's definitely growing, our pro bono program. And we have a whole team now, pro bono coordinator, director, et cetera. So they really are trying to connect, whether it's, you know, retired professionals in this area or people who've done other work and just are interested in volunteering. So yes, please feel free. You can contact me directly if you'd like, and I'd be happy to put them in touch because we love to connect with the community. And the more volunteers we have, the better we're able to serve.
I know. Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Christy.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Marcia. Thank you so much for your presentation and all your work as a fellow legal aid attorney. I know how difficult your work is, and appreciate you doing the hard work for our clients. I had a similar question about if you have a timeline of when you might open an Indio and what support you might need from either this committee, CVAG, or us in our individual city roles. I know I, along with Greg Rodriguez, had a call with your executive director now probably 2 to 3 years ago, asking if you need funding to expand, if you need building space, you know, what is it that we need to do to get more of a presence? Because we know data shows that legal aid interventions are often the most effective interventions, both for preventing homelessness and also alleviating it. So could you speak to that a little bit? Do you have plans to open an Indio anytime soon? Are there ways that we can coordinate to help either make your work more effective, do remote clinics throughout the valley? How else can we help?
I would say, from my understanding, so we did just have a bit of a transition. Our deputy director of operations, which was Tessie I can never pronounce her last name, Tessie Cross, that's her name. A lot of people know her by that. She just promoted into our executive director position. So that position right now has not been filled, and that's typically the person who is trying to find office space, et cetera. My understanding is, I think we haven't had much recent development when it comes to finding space in the Low Desert. I know we've looked like Indio, Palm Springs, somewhere around that area. But I can definitely follow up with Tessie and see where we are in the search, see if there has been any recent development with our realtors, et cetera, and I'll let them know that we have support, that you guys are willing to assist however we can to be able to get an office open in that space. I agree. I think it's very important and it's overdue. But I can get more precise information about where we are in that process. And definitely in the meanwhile, I know we have, I believe our family law team is doing a clinic style, I think it's a weekly basis. I'd have to check, but I know they are doing a clinic in that area. And then through our partnership with CBDG, we're bringing, you know, services to that area as well. But whatever we can do, at least in the meanwhile, to kind of be able to access more people until we actually have a physical office space, I'd love to kind of brainstorm with Tessie and we can discuss further.
That'd be great. Thank you. And I'll reach out to your office too, because I think that we're one of the most underserved regions in the entire state for legal aid attorneys. Inland County's legal services get federal funding to be our legal aid provider. And so we very, very much need to fund you and make sure that you have a physical presence here because of the work for prevention as well. So that was my second question. So you're providing support for our clients in CV200 program. Is there other work that you can do with prevention or, you know, eviction defense or other work to prevent people from becoming homeless and onto our list?
Yes. So our housing team in particular does assist with evictions. We haven't incorporated their services into the clinic. But they do have a housing hotline, which is usually the fastest way for people to get services. They can call directly because we know evictions and things, these things turn around very quickly. So they need assistance within usually like 72 hours. So they're not working with us through the clinic specifically, but we do have additional services when it comes to prevention, et cetera, that can be accessed either through us, if it's appropriate, or through other practice groups at ICLS as well.
Thank you. And I think if you or CVAG staff get us that information, we can then distribute that to our communities because often most tenants just leave, even if they're being unlawfully evicted, for example, discriminated against, harassed, et cetera, because they can't access an attorney. So I think that resources would be great for our community. Thank you. Thank you. Those are my last questions. And I'll just say I was sitting here looking really proud because we talked about this, about how to leverage services that already exist in the community and experts who already do it. And I'm just really proud that this committee moved forward a few years ago to enter into an agreement with you and have ICLS do this important work. And we know it's changing lives. I'm so really grateful for your work and for this committee's continued commitment to making sure that people have legal aid and can access their benefits. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christina. And just to kind of toot our own horn, this committee has been very active in providing service to the homeless and moving in a positive direction. So I'm very pleased with that. And Marcia, we look forward to you coming back and giving us an update, maybe at our next meeting. So that would be great. Thank you. And we look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you for having me. Have a nice day.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll move on to item number B, which is the CV Housing First 2022 Year in Review. Erica, you're going to start it off.
I am. Thank you, Chair, committee members. We have not done one of these in a little bit of time. I think you all remember that Tom spent quite a bit of time, especially in our first year of programming, going through each quarter how we were doing. We've certainly been providing you quarterly updates, but as we have wrapped our second full year of in-house operations, we did want to kind of reflect on where we've done and where we see some challenges. And then in the next item, seek your feedback on some next steps. So kind of in broad terms here, you'll recall, and as Councilmember Holstead just referenced, we do have the CV200 program. And in its first year, we permanently house 75 of those individuals. Based on your direction, we, at the beginning of last calendar year, essentially reset the list. We worked with law enforcement, code enforcement, our partners to identify individuals who may no longer be in the Valley, may have received services elsewhere, or should have now been in the Valley and need to be on this list. This list is the chronically homeless individuals. They are the ones that you see most frequently that your law enforcement, code enforcement know by name. These are the individuals who are in our hospitals most frequently and utilizing public resources. And as you all know, better than anybody, by getting these individuals into permanent housing solutions, we can reduce the costs of that we are spending in public resources to help them in other programs. So how did we do in 2022? We housed another 54 individuals from this list. We're incredibly proud of that, but it is a dip from the year before. Before I get into kind of some of the explanations why, I'd like to introduce you to some of our clients. And with me, I have Ivan Tenorio, our management analyst for CV Housing First. And Ivan, maybe you could tell us here about Ms. Newton.
Hi, good morning, everybody. So meet Mrs. Newton. She's from Desert Hot Springs. Give me 1 second. Oh, sorry about that. Hi again. This is Mrs. Newton. She's been homeless for about 4 or 5 years from the city of Desert Hot Springs, living out in her car. We've actually worked with her twice. I believe in 2021 and then another time in 2022. Due to some unforeseen issues, we weren't able to house her initially our first two times. But this most recent time, I actually re-engaged with her one day out in Palm Springs doing outreach with our mobile access center. And we spoke. You know, she was willing to recommit and give it one more shot. And we were able to actually successfully house her late last year with a permanent supported housing voucher. And this is Mr. Nelson from Cathedral City, a Navy vet. Has been homeless for since 2020, shortly after the pandemic. I actually met Mr. Nelson during CVAC's contract with Path of Life, and we offered him, you know, resources and housing. But at that time, unfortunately, it just didn't work out. The timing wasn't there. But late last year, early summer last year, Cathedral City PD ended up connecting me with him once more. And he was willing to commit to the program and thought, you know, give it a shot. And we were actually able to actually house him last year. And this is Mrs. Calderon of Coachella. She's actually been homeless for over a decade. She's pretty familiar out in the Loves area on Dillon Road. She's a very familiar face. We actually spoke with her during outreach, offer her the same program as we offered everybody, you know, case management, offered them to come to our CSH unit. And we partnered, actually got her connected to ICLS and offer her, you know, the legal clinic, as Marcia explained a little while ago. And we were able to get her public benefits started, and she got into a low-income unit, and now she's housed.
So those are some of our success stories, as they were over the last year. In addition, we did have some non-CV200 households, many of whom were referred to us through other programs, that we did get into permanent housing solutions. You'll recall we tracked this a little bit different than on an individual basis, and the numbers are more detailed in your staff report. One of the things that we've been wanting to really be clear about, though, is how do we look forward to 2023? And what do we do moving forward? And how do we improve on the lessons learned? So for this year, following the direction that we took last year, we have reset or in the process of almost finalizing the reset list of CV200 for this year. And again, that is done in close partnership with local law enforcement, code enforcement. And as you kind of look at our numbers, they are down, and we spent a lot of time reflecting on why that is. And some of this is detailed in your staff report. Quite frankly, at the beginning of 2021, we didn't realize that at the time, but as we brought the program in-house, many of our clients had already kind of started on the runway towards case management and getting permanent housing. Path of Life had them under our previous contract. And so our first two quarters of 2021 were remarkably high for quarterly numbers as compared to what we've seen since. In addition, we have seen issues with clients not wanting to follow the rules and their own behavioral health challenges. We certainly have had clients that we've had to evict from our units because they just were not willing to follow along with the program, and in some cases weren't willing to accept the help that we were able to secure. At the same time, Greg could probably talk about this far longer than I can. It's been a challenge sometimes to get vouchers. There's a list. There is a need in this county, and we have found ways to expedite our clients in the process of securing vouchers. But in many cases, the vouchers are not keeping up with the cost of rent in this valley. You all know this and have seen the trends. There's an example one of your staff reports. In one case, we had a voucher that was $150 less per month than what the rental costs were, and we couldn't secure the unit. And this also speaks to the broader need in our valley for more affordable housing solutions. And because of this need, we want to be very clear, and Tom in particular has been very forthcoming and direct with all of you and his direction to staff. We will be very transparent about how we're able to find successes. In some cases, in many cases, we're finding housing availability in other communities, and we're housing in Riverside and Hemet and in the high desert because the vouchers or the units are not available here. So some of the other things that you see in the yearly report and have seen in the quarterly report is the length of stay. In some cases, our clients are staying a little longer than we ideally like them to. We aim for a 90-day turnaround, and that's in part because these crisis stabilization units are really valuable. They're an important public resource, and we want the more we can get clients in and out of units, the more we're getting permanently housed. In some cases, we've had to extend some clients' lengths of stay because we knew we were really close to securing a unit. And we've had some clients fall out of housing. In the first year, it was about 5. Clients of our permanently housed fall out of their permanent housing solution. Your staff report notes that there were 4 of the 54 this year. We just heard from a landlord that actually 2 that we had previously of those 4 actually did retain their housing. There was some work with the landlord. So of the 54 that were permanently housed over the 2022, we've had 2 fall out of housing. And we are checking back with our clients on a regular basis every 6 months. So to make sure that our long-term success is measurable. Chair, we'll discuss where we'd like some recommendations for 2023 and how we'd like to improve those numbers with the next item. But at this point, we're asking the committee to receive the quarterly report, which is essentially the year-end report. And I'm happy to address any questions or Ivan.
Thank you, Erica. Any questions for Erica before we move on to our next item? You know what, Erica, quick question. If somebody falls out of housing, are they eligible to come back again?
Yes, we have talked to, based on the direction that you all have provided in the past, and we do have policies in place where we can go back and reassess. Based on the client's needs, it might vary a little bit. And that might not mean that they're immediately put into a crisis stabilization unit. In some cases, we might need to conduct outreach or other, but that wouldn't prevent us from going back and trying to assist the clients.
Okay. Christy.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation and all your work. I know this represents a lot of work from staff. So thank you to you and all of our staff members working on this program in-house. I just have a few questions. One, so the availability of vouchers, the staff reports indicates, is one of the major hurdles. So what are we doing with the county to ask for more vouchers, fix that system, make sure that our folks can get vouchers in time so we can really move people through the system?
I'll let Greg maybe talk about some of this a little bit more than I do, put him on the hot seat. Maybe he'll commit to doubling our voucher availability while he's here. One of the examples, we've been trying to be very creative, Councilmember Holstich. And thanks to the funding and the direction from you all and some of the encouragement to think outside of the box for this program, we've tried to find ways to streamline. ICLS is a great example of cutting down time. The more we can get clients ready for a voucher, right? And the quicker we can, the sooner we can put them on the list. Another example is our behavioral health partnerships. We were finding that there are vouchers where you need to identify or that are available for those with behavioral health needs long-term. And one of the things that we found is that was taking a really long time to go through the more traditional process of working through the county to get those resources. So what we wound up doing instead was hiring somebody directly and putting them on contract so that way we could get our clients directly into a behavioral health specialist, identify their needs, and therefore expedite their time on the list. Those are just two of the ways that jump to mind, but one of the things we would like with the next staff report to kind of tee that up is to talk about how we address some of the voucher issues. And Greg, maybe you can expand on that as well.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. And it's a great question, Christy. And it's not just a challenge for our area. It's a challenge for the entire country, actually. The real key issue is the federal government has not stepped up and allocated more vouchers. And so this is really where we need to start lobbying our congressional representatives for that allocation. I was in a meeting in D.C. in the White House a couple months back, and there is talks about pulling out some of the housing and homeless portions of the Build Back Better plan because there seems to be bipartisan support. And we'll see how that runs in the federal government these days. But to the point of where the county has really tried to help is increasing eligibility. We actually, about 3 months ago now, reduced the age requirements. So we targeted for those 70 and above now can be prioritized for vouchers. We didn't used to have an age prioritization. As we know, we have more seniors falling into homelessness. So we have that. Of course, we prioritize our veterans, women with children, and obviously individuals with disabilities. We are looking at ways on how there's difficulty because we have to abide by fair housing laws. And so prioritization gets difficult. However, we're looking and talking with HUD on some regulatory changes on if we have people, say, in a program like CVAG CV200 program, prioritizing those individuals for housing through a voucher. The difficulty gets into prioritization on the CES or Coordinated Entry System, sorry for the acronym, and age requirements, level of acuity. And so it's balancing those and how we determine that. So just for your knowledge and the committee's knowledge, is we are as a county looking at how to streamline some of the processes within the current HUD regulations. But we also have, and actually Supervisor Washington met with HUD and discussed this last week about how we change some of the regulatory requirements that allows us to speed up and be a little bit more flexible and nimble in how we allocate those.
Can you double our vouchers allotment?
Christy, I bring so much money to this valley, it's not even funny.
I know.
I think there's also another option. I won't get in the weeds here. I think this could be a presentation for another committee meeting. But in the partnership that many of you know that we've developed with IEHP, and I see a representative from Molina is actually on the call on the attendees list, through the Housing and Homeless Incentive Program through CalAIM, the new name for Medi-Cal, on some reimbursements for housing. And we understand that the Department of Healthcare Services at the state level is looking at how they can cover more housing costs and expenses. One of the challenges Erica brought up, and we're trying to see again through HUD how we can get around, is that say a voucher covers $1,500, just for lack of a better number, of rent, but the rent is $1,800, we're not allowed to subsidize the voucher, and which is stupid in my opinion, especially when we have like rapid rehousing dollars and other pots of money. So how do we, of course, look at, is the federal government setting the voucher a real fair market rate? But more importantly, if they're not, and we have rent spikes, especially with Riverside County being one of the largest rent spikes, actually the largest in the state, why are we not able to subsidize that in the meantime of those adjusting those rates? So,
and those limitations are on Section 8 vouchers. Sorry, Mr. Chair, but we could create our own vouchers, like other funded vouchers, other programs that would cover the difference or cover the full amount for tenants, right? So most of the hangups are related to the Section 8 federal voucher.
Actually, yeah, any voucher coming out of HUD, of Housing and Urban Development. Now, you could create your own voucher program. However, you can't pair that with a HUD voucher. So it would have to be a completely separate program.
Thanks. And then I just have one final question, if I can, Mr. Chair. We've heard a number of complaints about Section 8 discrimination. So a lot of landlords just not taking Section 8 or vouchers, even though the state law changed and landlords are no longer able to discriminate based on the way you're paying your rent, either by a voucher or cash, et cetera. Are you seeing that as a large scale problem in the Coachella Valley? Is it impacting our program?
We're not seeing it as a large scale problem. We have heard of a few instances in that, not in the Coachella Valley. The ones that I've heard of have been in Riverside. We know that the attorney general at the state level is looking at enforcement mechanisms and how to ramp that up. We also know, I know that District Attorney Mike Hestron also is in consultation with them as well, because to your point, it's a violation of law. And if I can just add on too, is just overall on the county is, I want to applaud the CV200 model and the work that the staff does as well. And the county, actually, we're going through what we're calling all integrated service delivery model. It's a whole system change through the county, but we're actually doing a demonstration pilot project through our department, through Housing and Workforce Solutions, in targeting the high utilizers. We're going to do this in Riverside, but it's completely modeled after the CV200 program. So I just want to emphasize that, because this is a model that people are looking at statewide. And I sit on many state calls and it is being recognized. It may not seem like a lot of numbers, but I think it's really important to keep in mind, these are the most difficult individuals to house. And they're the most visible ones we see on our streets. It's the ones that you as elected officials get called about. It's the one I get called about from you all. And so it is an effective model. And while we're not doing 300 to 400 at a time, you are dealing with some of the most vulnerable people and actually getting people permanently housed. And what's really important to point out is the long-term success rate and how they're remaining housed. And in programs like this, and specifically the one in the Coachella Valley, that's the real success story.
Thanks, Greg. Ernesto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Eric and Greg, for all the great work that you guys do. My question is, out of all these individuals that have been housed through CV 200 in 2021 and 2022, how many of those statistically do you believe are from Cathedral City, Palm Springs, or any other areas, any other cities within our Coachella Valley?
Well, they were all identified by our local law enforcement and code enforcement. So if in terms of city of origin, our CV 200 list does get broken down by jurisdiction. We have identified these individuals based on our communications with your police department or county sheriff's department. So in terms of how many are local, they were all locally identified. There's a few, as you may recall, the committee may recall from previous staff reports, there's a few what we call flex spots, very minor. Those are for referrals throughout the year. Things may change, but these are identified by our community resources who are interacting, to Greg's point, with these chronically homeless individuals on a regular basis.
But you don't have a specific, how many come from each specific city?
To break down the 54, yeah. I don't have that with me, but we could certainly follow back up with the committee. We could tell you how many of the 54 came from, say, Cathedral City or elsewhere.
But I think all of them came from our
CV200s. Yeah.
Yeah. My next question will be actually answered, I'm sure, by your following presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions before we move on to our next topic? If not, then I'll entertain a motion to receive and file the quarterly report.
Seconded.
Okay, I think there was a motion in a second. Erica, did you catch that?
I didn't catch who made the motion.
I'll make the motion. I said seconded, but I'm sorry. I can only file.
Okay.
I thought that was a test. Maybe she was testing.
And Donna, you second?
Yes.
Okay, great. Motion second. All in favor, please raise your hand. Motion carries unanimously. Okay, we'll move on to item number C, the CV Housing First Program in 2023. Erica.
Yes, thank you, Chair, committee members. I won't go into some of the challenges we faced. And so we just recap that with our last report. Rather talk to you about where we see some opportunities. And what we're asking for today is some endorsement of some ways forward where we think we can improve our numbers in 2023 and create more opportunities to help more individuals off the streets. So the first is to some of the comments that you just made, and that's in terms of vouchers. The example I used about $150 gap in the city of Indio is a real one. We are seeing vouchers that are not necessarily keeping up with the skyrocketing rental costs. In other communities and in Riverside County overall, there have been ways to encourage landlords to work with programs like ours through landlord incentive programs where you can work with them, and the longer clients stay, there may be some financial incentive for the landlord. CVAG staff is recommending, with your blessing, that we explore a program like this using our CV Housing First funding and see if that is a way we can perhaps open doors. The other part of the recommendation before you is about some permanent doors for our program. We shifted to an in-house program just a couple of years ago and have already demonstrated success. And we're renters. CVAG is renting units. And when these rents go up, so do our program costs. And we are seeing costs rise. Don't need to explain to all of you what the market looks like out there. There is an opportunity that the county has, county staff has presented with us of funding out there that is available for a purchase of a property. And by a property, we mean a duplex or triplex, maybe four units. And we would like we're recommending you give the executive director some authorization to coordinate with Riverside County to explore using the funds that are available and identify if there's a property to purchase for units. Now, if CVAG were to purchase a property, it would be used for crisis stabilization units, would not be used to permanently house clients. We would use it much like we're using the units we're renting now. But instead of renting, we would own units. And this would allow us, we think, to maintain some stability for the program long term. Now, we're coming to you with these kind of concepts early on because, as you all know from some of my previous presentations, we've come to you kind of midway through an idea and said, hey, what do you think? And the feedback we've always gotten from this committee is we'd like to be brought in sooner than later. So we're coming to you with these kind of concepts, and we're asking for your authorization for our executive director to go explore these options. And then once we have a little bit more information, analysis, and can work with the county to identify some potential purchases, we would return to you and say, well, kind of, what do you think? Should we proceed? That is my big picture recap of the staff report. I am happy to address any questions.
Questions for Erica. And I talked to Erica earlier, and I thought that maybe it might be a good idea to establish a ad hoc committee of the homeless committee to help along those processes. I know we've done this in the past. It's worked fairly well. We don't have to wait from month to month. We can have the committee meet a couple of times before and bring us some information and moves the process a little bit quicker. So if you guys wouldn't mind, maybe we'll set up an ad hoc committee. If you're interested in serving on that ad hoc committee, please submit your name to Erica, and we will get that started.
Chair, we do have a couple of hands raised with Director Rogers.
Carol?
Right?
Yes, thank you. You know, that's a creative idea, but I also think that there are other creative ideas, and I'm sure, you know, that setting up an ad hoc committee is probably the best way to go about exploring those. I know that that Greg and Grace and I submitted a proposal to establish a land trust for affordable housing. And that's something that maybe we could run through CVAG or Live to Rise and get that moving.
Okay, thanks. Greg.
Yeah, I just want to expand a little bit on the staff report, and it really gets back to the main point of the affordability and availability of doors, especially for the crisis stabilization units. And this is actually something the county is looking at too. It's, you know, it used to be as the county did own public housing and then we got rid of it all. And now we're kind of regretting that we did that. And so we're actually looking too at some master leasing and ownership possibilities as well. It's a lot. And I'm in total support of the ad hoc committee to flesh the details out, but it just makes sense financially. Because you have less operating costs. Again, you don't have the lag time between if you lose a unit. You have more stability in knowing what your housing stock is. And so I'm in total support of the ad hoc committee to flesh this out. But just as we move through this process, I don't think we need to plan for plan's sake. I also want to emphasize too that the dollars are coming from ARPA, American Recovery Plan Act. And so there is an expenditure deadline. It's a year out, but just so you know that money has to be expended. But this is a direct allocation from the county with no strings attached, which is a very rare thing. So going forward, and I don't know if we need a motion to do the ad hoc committee, Erica, but if we do, I'm happy to make that.
I don't think we do, Greg.
I think
that the ad hoc committee can meet virtually too, so we can, you know, have a couple of meetings that can move a lot quicker that way as well too. So why don't we have anybody who's interested submit your name to Erica, and then we'll set up that ad hoc committee and start meeting as soon as possible.
I'm sure Council Member Carnevale will be interested, so I'll pass along the information since he's the primary in this committee.
Okay, great.
But and Erica, I'm sorry, Chair.
Go ahead, Lynn.
I am a realtor. And I'd be happy to serve on that ad hoc.
Great. Thank you. And I know, Erica, that you're looking for a recommendation to go forward with this. So we can start it with Tom as well, correct?
Yes. And if we're hearing consensus, there's two parts to this. Sounds like the ad hoc would work with us explore the property idea that we just discussed. And then if I'm hearing consensus, we don't necessarily need a formal motion, but as long as there's consensus from the committee on directing the executive director to return with recommendations on how to adjust the funding gaps, or you could make a motion to that effect.
I think there's consensus. I don't see anybody that's saying, no, we don't need to do it. So I see a lot of nodding of heads. That looks like a consensus to me. So Erica, we'll move forward with that as well, too.
Great.
Thank you all. Okay, we'll move on to our informational items. They are informational. We do have ex officio members on the line. I don't know if anybody needs to address the committee. If so, we'll have Erica bring them in.
I don't see any hands raised at this time.
Okay. Well, we'll move on to public comments. And are there any public comments, Erica, from any non-agenda items?
And actually, Mr. Chair, if I could just give a couple comments on the care court. I think some of you may know that there's been a lawsuit filed by the ACLU and some other groups to stop the care court based on some civil liberties. We can debate that another time. I just want to let the committee know that Riverside County, of course, is one of the counties in the first cohort. We meet on not only a monthly basis within the county team, but on a weekly basis with consultants, not paid consultants, but state consultants and county department officials on implementation. Just wanted to let you all know that we are moving forward planning for a complete implementation by October. The difficulties is we don't know what, like how many individuals we're going to do. There's very specific criteria. So we're developing right now a communication plan for the public and for you as elected officials as well, because we don't want people thinking that everyone can be referred just based on any mental health issue, because that's not what the criteria is. We're working through issues around availability of housing. We're pushing back on the state on them looking at us to take money away from current funding streams like the HAP funds or other funding streams. But I just wanted to give you all an update that the county and actually is leading statewide in our effort. We have counties that are copying the model that we're doing, but in anticipation of complete rollout by October of this year.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. Okay, Erica, we didn't have any public comment. Is that correct?
That is correct, Chair.
Okay, great. So we'll move on to announcements. Our next meeting is April 19th. We're not having one in March, Erica?
That is correct. CVAG usually goes dark in March, yes. And we will see you in April as we continue our 50th anniversary celebration here at CVAG.
That's right. So, okay. Well, with that being said, we'll look forward to the ad hoc committee getting together. I know, Lynn, that you've indicated your willingness. So anybody else, please let Erica know, and we'll get that started as soon as possible. Obviously, you'll be busy during the month of March and moving forward, even though we won't be. But again, welcome to the new members. Thank you. This committee really does a lot of hard work. And we're very flexible and moving quickly as well. So if you're a new member on the committee, please reach out to Erica to get some updates if you need that. And we look forward to our next meeting. With that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Great. I don't think we need a second. We are adjourned. Erica, thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye, everyone.